Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms, RPMs, in All GTLD's PDP Working Group call held on the 12th of July, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call, as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Again, Brian Beckham, we have you noted. Hearing no further names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, J. Scott Evans. Please begin.
Thank you very much, Terry. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone, wherever you may be today. Thank you for attending this call, our first conference call after the face-to-face three-hour meeting, which we held in Johannesburg, South Africa. For those of you that may not have been there nor have had time to review the transcript or the recording of that particular meeting, it was co-chaired by myself, Kathy, and Phil, each taking one of the hours. And the way we broke it up was the first hour I moderated and co-chaired, while Lori Schulman from the Sunrise sub-team presented the refined charter questions to the larger group and took an input from all those in attendance, not just members of the working group. In fact, we tried to give preference to non-working group members, given that working group members have these calls and the mailing list in which to provide their input. The second hour, Christine Duran joined us from Seattle by telephone line, and she presented the Trademark Clearinghouse revised charter questions. And then the last hour, actually, it didn't turn out to be an hour. It actually turned out to be about 45 or 50 minutes due to the fact that we were running a bit long. We had a discussion with certain registrars and registries in the room, given just the workflow of the Trademark Clearinghouse, how it works, how it's been implemented, struggles, successes, failures that were seen by those. And I personally think everyone found that to be a very good discussion. You should have received a note from Amr telling you that the session was recorded. In regards to the registrars and registries, it's about the last 45 minutes, so that would be like at hour 2:15 that you would fall into the discussion regarding registrars and registries, which is probably going to be the newest information for people that are on this call. So now, as we prepare to move forward, we are going to be looking at, again, the Sunrise registration charter questions and the input that we received during the meeting, and also the trademark claims notice subgroup and the input we received. I do understand that Christine Durain is not with us today, and Michael is feeling a bit under the weather, so depending on whether he is able to lead us through that discussion, if not, we may have to depend on some of staff to assist us with that discussion. And the co-chairs have had a meeting earlier this week, and also by email, we confirmed that we've asked staff to jump in at any time during this discussion to raise their hand to help us make sure that we're capturing as much as possible of the input that we received during the face-to-face meeting in Johannesburg. So with that, I do believe Lori Schulman is on with us today. Lori, do you want to give sort of a summary of where we ended up and what we took in at the meeting in Johannesburg?
Yes. Thank you, Jim Scott. Lori Schulman for the joining us. I thought we had a pretty good discussion. We have two work products from the Sunrise Group. We have a work product that we had agreed upon prior to Joburg that is a more substantive chart that has the original questions. It has a comment section about where we think the questions are, you know, have strengths or weaknesses, and then proposed refinements. But we didn't actually create what I would call a rewritten piece of work. However, for Joburg, because the intention was to do a little more community outreach beyond the regular members of the group, the staff put together a chart that took out the editorials and just included the refined questions. I thought the chart was very clean and helpful to the broader community in terms of where we think we are headed with the final questions in terms of the Sunrise Charter. We got very good feedback, I thought, particularly from James Liddell, in terms of some definitions, creating some community understanding about when we talk about particular terms within the Sunrise period that were all on the same page, as we had proposed some definitions for premium names, reserve names, premium pricing. And James had suggested he thought it would be a very good idea to maybe even perhaps define standard pricing. So I thought that was very, very good input. Ruben Kuhl also intervened, which I thought was some timely point about using the Sunrise period for registration for terms that may have meaning as trademarks in particular segments but not have meaning as trademarks in other segments, and just Sunrise makes sense in those segments. And that is something that we have talked about extensively, and we do have comments and support in that area. So we have some takeaways here that some of the questions as we envision them still need refinement, we still need new definitions. But overall, I do believe the work was well received. If anybody feels differently, I'd like to know. But at the end of the day, I think we're well on our way to having our questions where they need to be in order for us to tackle them full on.
Great. Lori, I think several people, I don't know if you, I think you may just be on audio, are having trouble hearing you. Is there any way you can either adjust your mic or pick up a handset because you're difficult to hear? With that, I'm going to turn to Amr, who has his hand up.
Can somebody dial out then?
Sure.
I'll put a dial out number to Mary.
I'm not sure. Is Mary with us this morning? Yeah, there she is. I see her.
Yep.
Okay. Go ahead. Amr?
And Lori, it's Terry. I have your number. I'll have the operator dial out to you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Scott, and thanks, Lori and Terry. Before we did start the review of the refinements that were made in Johannesburg, I just wanted to point something out very quickly, that the documents you see in the Adobe Connect room in front of you, as well as the one we will be sharing later for trademark claims, has been slightly edited since I sent documents to the mailing list yesterday. And this has been done to include some of the notes that I circulated with the agenda, just to make sure that all the information that was presented in Johannesburg and that was shared by the community as well during when the working group was seeking input would be present during this call. So initially, the documents that were circulated only included the suggested refinements to the questions and track changes, but now you will see a number of comments and balloons on the side, and you should all be able to scroll through the documents yourselves. But those should capture some of the notes that were shared as well during the face-to-face meeting. And I just wanted to point that out so that folks know what they're looking at. Thank you very much. And these documents will be posted to the meeting's wiki page and circulated to the list following this call. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Amr. So, Lori, can we go through the questions and look at some of the notes that are there? Are you with us again? Okay, while she's dialing in, Amr, can I ask you to lead us through until Lori returns?
Scott, this is Amr again. Sure, and Lori, please, when you are dialed in, just let us know.
I'm going to send her a private message to let her know that, Amr. Go ahead.
Okay, so if you look at page 2 of the report, this is the page following the brief introduction. Here are the three definitions that the Sunrise Registration Subteam came up with regarding reserve names, and premium pricing. And I think noteworthy are some of the comments that we received during the face-to-face meeting, one from James Bledel on premium pricing, and another comment on that same definition. So James had suggested that a definition be added for standard pricing to sort of set a benchmark for the premium pricing. And so this is something the working group will probably follow up on. The second comment was that was made in the Adobe Connect chat by a remote participant during the face-to-face meeting was a suggestion for a change in the definition of premium pricing. So you can see the suggestion on the balloon on the side of the document saying wording seems a little odd. Shouldn't it just be higher prices better? Charged from premium names?
There we are. Laurie is back with us, Amr. So, Laurie, just to bring you up to speed on where we are, Amr was talking about, he had pointed out that we were going through the comments that we received, just to let everyone see where we received comments. He'd covered the comment by James Bledel, talking about premium pricing and standard pricing, and then he was just covering the comment we received by remote participant about the premium pricing definition, which is all on page 2 of the document.
Thank you so much. Amr, if you want to finish your thought, or I can just pick up from here.
Please take it away, Laurie. Thank you very much.
There was a suggestion that I think it might actually be a good one, that perhaps we were complicating the premium pricing definition a little bit, and maybe just say premium pricing is higher prices charged for premium names. And I think that is worthy of discussion. I did feel, though, that when we were writing these definitions, that it was probably important to still have the baseline about what a premium name is and why a price might be higher as opposed to just saying higher prices. But if clarity requires maybe something shorter, we would certainly be open to looking at higher prices charged for premium names. We haven't discussed it as a subgroup yet, as many people took last week off from ICANN work, so did we.
Okay, thank you. Let's go ahead and move quickly on through these comments so we can do that. And then, Laurie, I'd like to look at sort of at the end of this let's pull through the comments fairly quickly. If anyone has any questions or concerns about comments or additional comments, please raise your hand. And then I'd like to look at the data that we think we need to acquire and sort of have a look at what we're talking about gathering.
Thank you.
So let's just go on through the comments.
Are we going to get – we have the comments from the report, but then, Amr, do you want to put the comments up on the – from our chart? I guess I'm confused about which document next we will be referring to. The actual questions that we discussed, the refined questions with the group, or the work group work product? I apologize for the confusion. On my end.
Amr, what document do you have up in the window right now?
Yeah, the document up on the screen right now is the report that was prepared by the Sunrise Registration subteam. Okay. It includes track changes in the refined questions. The ones highlighted in yellow are the ones from the Johannesburg face-to-face meeting. The ones that aren't are from the last call that we held before ICANN 59, which was on the 21st of June. And Laurie, you will also see that there are comments and balloons on the side, and those are just notes that were captured during the interactive discussion with the committee members at ICANN 59, but that didn't necessarily result in further refinements to the questions.
Okay.
But the document is the one that the subteam produced. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate the clarification. I just will go through the highlighted comments, and if anybody has any input from this group on it, we're happy to hear it. One of the highlighted questions is when we were talking about what we call preamble questions, we felt that there were clarifying questions that should be asked up front, taking a group of questions that were running through the original charter. You'll see there it's questions 1, 7, 14, 16, 18, 19, and 22. We combine them in a way to have what we thought were level setters.
and an additional level setter aside from the first five, there's now a sixth, have abuses of the sunrise period been documented by registries and registrars? So that is another way to gauge. You know, we have registrants who feel there may be abuses. We have trademark owners who feel they may be there been abuses. And so how are the registries and registrars also coping with what they may feel are abuses? So we will move on from that. The next one is, and Amr, I'm going to ask you to actually help me here. As these comments were put into the chart, I'm having difficulty reading them on the screen, on the group screen. But we had some threshold questions, and we wanted to reword things in a way that could possibly, again, help create greater clarity in terms of what we're reaching. We're trying to reach a balanced result between interests of registrars, registries, interests between trademark owners, who these RPMs are intended to protect, the rights, not the owners, I should say, the rights, and the registrants, who could be anybody. They could be domain investors. They could be the average small business operator. They could be big business. So any registrant encompasses, in my mind, the whole community. So the threshold question we felt needed to be asked in terms of the premium names question, which is on the side, the original question is registry pricing within the scope of the RPM working group or ICANN's review? Is there evidence that registry sunrise or premium name pricing limits trademark's ability to participate? Where I'm having trouble reading, Amr, is the bubbles. So I might ask
thanks,
the group
Lori,
to...
This is Amr.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Lori. This is Amr. So we have two sets of comments on the threshold question for number two. The first was from Denise, and she recommended collecting data on pricing practices for Sunrise as part of the data collection effort. And the second comment was by Jeff Newman, who recommended that the question on the pricing being within the scope of the RPM working group be deferred and sent to the GNSO Council. But I will note as well that members of the working group did state that so far as this pricing affects the ability of trademark holders to be able to use Sunrise effectively, that in those terms, the pricing should be considered by this working group. So those are a couple of comments on this question here.
Thank you. Thank you. I think that the comment, and I can read it a little bit, that Amadou had suggested as well, is pricing actually a deterrent to using the remedy itself? You know, I guess this isn't really a remedy, but the prescriptive action. So we'll move on. Question three, where we had some discussion, is should registries be required to create a mechanism that allows trademark owners in the TMCH to challenge a premium name for the purpose of requiring its release so that the trademark owner can register it during the period? And again, Amr, I cannot read the print on the screen. If you could read the bubbles, that would be most helpful.
Sure. Thanks, Lori. This is Amr, and this was a comment by John Nevitt, and it says a need to balance the various interests here suggests including some sort of standards to review whether it was appropriate for a registry to put a specific name, example, police under a GOTLD, on a premium list. This should also be done for reserve lists.
Okay, and then there's a comment underneath in the chat. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, a second comment from the Adobe Connect chat by Ben Anderson was, should we also be asking whether the list of trademarks in the TMCH being used in an abusive way to create premium name lists in some registries. And then a final comment by Paul Tattersfield, who was also participating remotely, but I believe is on today's call, is differential pricing between Sunrise and open registrations impacting registrations?
Thank you. And then down to
I think that last comment by Paul, I think, was in relation to question four, not question three. So apologies.
Okay. Well, we're right on top of four. It is related, and that is our registry operator reserved means practices unfairly limiting participation in Sunrise by trademark holders. And we do have public comments there. You know, how would we find out whether differential pricing between Sunrise and open registration is impacting the registrations? So we would need some kind of data on that. And then there is, Maxim had also entered a comment as well that I can't read.
This is Omar again, Lori. And Maxim's comment reads, cannot have a one-size-fits-all rule for open and unrestricted TLDs, reserve names that match trademarks in the TMCH should not be premium names. For community-based TLDs, there may be a reason. So I think he was just trying to point out that you can't have a standard rule covering different scenarios.
And I do want to point out in the chat that people are talking about whether or not including the word unfairly in question four is a charged word or not. We are, again, we strive for balance. We have worked very, very hard in our proposed questions to try to remove what we think is charged language. I don't know that I have a particular opinion on this at this moment, but I do think it is a question for the group to look at whether or not we want to include words like unfairly or questions that might assume a bias. So I'm going to move on from that. And down to question seven.
George Karikos here. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Adam Ahendez. Going back to George Karikos for the transcript. Number three, I don't understand the question. It seems to be worded incorrectly or inappropriately because it says, should registries be required to create a system that allows the trademark owners to challenge a premium name for the purpose of requiring its release? My understanding is that during the Sunrise, you could still register the premium name. It just would just be at a premium price. Like the Sunrise refers to the ability to register, you know, any name. It could be, you know, a premium or a non-premium. It just, you know, who goes to the front of the line. So it seems to me that they want to register it during the Sunrise period at a normal price as opposed to a premium price. And so the wording doesn't seem to make sense to me. Maybe some of the registries might know differently, but I was under the impression that Sunrise names don't all have to be at one fixed price. Thanks.
Thank you, George. I noticed, Lori, that also Paul McGrady's hand is up, so let's recognize.
Yeah, so what I was going to do is maybe ask Paul to answer the question and to ask his question. Paul, do you mind doing that in terms of the premium pricing, or I can?
I have to admit that I really didn't understand George's question. So I don't know if Lori, if you understood what he was asking, I'm happy to defer.
Okay, sure. What I think George was asking is that his understanding is that you could register names in the Sunrise period for a premium price or a regular price, any price. And that is actually not what's been happening. There's been premium names that have been reserved, that are actually reserved. So the premium name and the reserved name issue become confused, you know, because some names are just held back, and many of those names have been trademarks. So it's not that clear cut. In terms of the confusion, I think that's where some of that might come in, where premium names are also reserved names. And I will go back to Paul.
Thanks, Lori. Hate to do this, but I have another question. And this is based upon my inability to hold in my head what all these documents said. I know we looked at them face-to-face. But do we make a distinction between when a name is given a premium price, perhaps a high premium price, that is the same consistent price to everybody, versus when a registry will give a premium price and lets the brand owner know that if they don't buy it at the premium price, that they then intend to, you know, sell it to somebody else more cheaply and maybe even subsidize that selling? We encountered that, I think, with at least one registry in the last round where, you know, it was much more directly targeted at the trademark owner as opposed to just having an outrageously high price, which essentially has the same outcome as it being a reserve name. If it's so expensive nobody can buy it, it might as well be reserved. And frankly, a lot of Sunrise registrations are registered for defensive purposes and only and they're put on the shelf. So, again, you know, sort of the same outcome. I still don't like it, but it seems less troublesome than when we've got two sets of prices, one for the brand owner and one for not the brand owner. Do we get at that? Do our questions get at that issue? Thanks.
I think that my response is they do to the extent that that is part of the answer. You know, should registries be required to create this mechanism? And if we say yes or no, then we document the why, and the why would be the circumstances that you just explained. As to a direct question to that particular practice, though, I don't believe that we have one. But I think that goes to sort of the evidence of why there should be a requirement or not a requirement to create a mechanism that allows trademark owners to challenge what your premium names and why, or even reserve names. Does that answer the question?
It does. Thank you, Lori. Very helpful. And also thank you to all the folks in the chat who just chimed in as well. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Jay Scott, would you like me to recognize the hand as we go, or would you prefer to do it?
Yes, and then we need to find out if George has a new hand.
It's a new hand.
An old hand.
It's a new hand.
Okay.
Okay, Susan, so then I'll recognize Susan Payne. Yeah, I'll recognize Susan Payne.
Hi, thanks. I was going to respond to George's point. I think George is correct. There are two different issues. I mean, some premium names, the premium name issue is a pricing one, but in some cases, premium reserved until Sunrise is finished, or can be. You know, some registries perhaps choose to hold their premium names and have a sort of a period of release at some point where they have a, you know, a sale of premium names or something like that, but some don't. So some premium names are available in the Sun, adjusted at a premium price. And this question was always meant to be about challenging premium names overall. It was not meant to be specifically about whether to get them released in the Sunrise. It was meant to be about challenging in both senses. And I don't know quite how we've lost the sense of challenging the price, but we appear to have lost it somewhere along the way.
Susan, if we could, I think that's a good point. If maybe you could note it in the chat so that Amar could put it in the notes, that would be very helpful.
Okay.
Okay. I think George, and then I see Paul. Is that an old hand? I expect it might be. We'll do George and then John Nevitt.
Okay, George Krinkles again for the transcript. If we go back to page 2, we actually had the definitions of reserve names and premium names. So it seems that you can't say that the premium name is unreleased, that the premium name is available. So the wording of question 3 on page 5 requiring its release doesn't make sense because it's not a reserve name. It seems to be, unless there's a fourth class, which is like premium but reserved or premium held back, which we haven't ever defined anywhere. So it seems that question 3 in the first column seemed to be more about challenging whether it should be a premium name at a premium price. And the way it got reworded into the new column, it doesn't seem to make sense. It seems to be arguing whether it should be released or not, and it's losing the aspect of whether it should be at a standard price versus a premium price. Thank you.
I think that's a good point. I see now. I understand why you're confusing it. Word release. I think that's a critical note. If you could note that about looking at the word release, or even looking at premium immediate, needs to say reserve. But there is the issue of premium pricing and reserve, and sometimes they cross. And if that's going to create confusion in the questions, then yes, we need to unwind the questions even further. To Paul's point about addressing certain practices that we know have happened in the past. So, Susan, is that a new hand? All right, then
okay,
John.
John Nevitt's next.
Thanks, Lori. So just a quick point on why we were asking for unfairly to be inserted in 2 and 4. If you look at both of those questions and you boil it down, saying essentially, is there evidence that domain name pricing at all limits owners' ability to participate during sunrise? And the obvious answer is yes. Obviously, if someone's charging, there's going to be less availability and it's going to be a limitation. That doesn't really help us at all. The question is, we really want to get to the instances like Paul McGrady mentioned where you have two sets of pricing or some what could be argued to be an unfair practice, not just the fact that there is pricing. And so that's why we ask for unfairly in number 2 and number 4. It seems like it showed up in number 4, but not in number 2. And to Mary's point, we wanted to raise that issue. And we want to get relevant information and not stuff that's not going to really help the group move forward on some kind of consensus recommendation. Thank you.
John, thank you for your comments. Does anybody else have a... Okay, we can move on.
We've only got about 10 or 15 more minutes, Lori, so...
Okay.
Try to power through.
That's okay. We'll power through. So we're up to question 7, where there was a suggestion on the which is now new question 5. The first part of the question was, does the current 30-day minimum for sunrise period serve its intended purpose? And there was a suggestion to add, particularly in view of the fact that many registry operators actually ran a 60-day period. So that's just a question of, well, what's really happening in the, you know, in the industry in particular time frames. Then I will go down to B. There was a suggestion in the question reads, in light of evidence gathered above, should the sunrise period continue to be mandatory or become optional? Should the working group consider returning to the original recommendation from the IRT and SPI of sunrise period or trademark claims? So I think that's just a debate we're going to need to have. Moving down, it looks like the others were typos, not substantive. Going down to question 11 with the ALRP, ALP, QLP periods, there is a suggestion from the chat. Amar, I'm going to ask you to read that suggestion quickly.
Sure. Thanks, Lori. This is Amar. So this was a suggested addition from a remote participant in the Adobe Connect chat, which reads, whether other lawful rights in some jurisdictions, like family names or non-registered used in trademarks, were precluded from getting priority as a result of ALP, QLP, or LRP.
Okay. Well, we will note that as a consideration and then move on. All right, down to question 13. There was suggested rewording as well as some comments in the bubble. So the original question was, is it possible
Lori,
to extend? Yeah? Did I make
yeah, sorry,
somebody?
This is Amar again.
Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out the highlighted bullets under question 8. One of the comments in Johannesburg regarding the first bullet under the header, the question asking, are limited registration periods in need of review via the sunrise period. I think one of the comments was that this should not be a yes or no answer, and it should be qualified with the second question, which was added. So this is a new one, the one highlighted in yellow, which says what aspects of LRP are in need of review. So it was just a suggestion to expand on this question in order to avoid a yes or no answer. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Anna. So we'll move forward to 13. The original question is on the side. It says, is it possible to expand the charter questions to include some of the underlying TMCH questions concerning trademark scope in the sunrise period? That's the main question. We considered that question 13. We reworded it and batched it with question 18 because we felt they covered similar themes, and we boiled it down to, in the light of evidence gathered above, should the scope of the sunrise registrations be limited to categories of goods and services for which the trademark is actually registered and put in the clearinghouse? I think this goes to some of the comments that Rubens had made in terms of when it's appropriate to keep a word, and people famously like to use police. police for music versus police for, let's say, a geographic term like police.nyc. This is a big question, we know. Amr, if you'd like to read the comment in the bubble, that would be helpful.
Yeah, thanks, Lori. The comment in the bubble says for GOTLD's jurisdiction of the mark in question should be added as well. But I also wanted to point out that this question was reworded as a result of feedback that the original wording was not very clearly understood. So the question, the rewording here was suggested by Susan Payne during the meeting, but is of course open for further editing or refining if the working group feels it is appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you. If I recall, we had considered Susan's comments in the open meeting and had suggested that they do be added to the chart. So I appreciate that they were added in between the meeting and now. Maxim, I see your hand.
Maxim Alzoba, for the record.
Yes.
I think we just lost it.
Okay, I hope you hear me well.
We can now.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to underline that we shouldn't forget one simple thing called picket fence. Well known to each registry. Basically, it sets options in the registry contract saying that ICANN is forbidden from certain things, and one of those things is regulation of prices. Yet, it's not.
He's fading in and out.
Yeah, I can't hear Maxim at all. Maxim, if you're on, maybe you could type into the chat. That might be easier, and then we can note your comments in the notes. I think that would be helpful at this point. And I'm going to move on in the interest of time.
Thank you, Laura.
So question 17. We're down to question 17, which is now question 11. The original question was, does Sunwise work for registrants and trademark holders in other scripts, languages, and should any of them be further internationalized, such in terms of service providers, languages served,
et cetera? The rough words.
Somebody please type into the chat, so please have Matt.
I will.
Thank you.
He seems to have gotten it, because I see him, but.
Okay. We decided to rework this and accepted some feedback as how effectively can trademark holders who use non-English script languages participate in Sunrise, including IDN Sunrises, and should any of them be further internationalized? So that was the question. I don't believe that there was any further comment about it, but this is the suggested rewording. In question 18, that was included in question 5 and 9. Amr, there was an AC chat comment about, it looks like, question 18. If you could please read that, I would be most appreciative. I think it says, consider also whether TMCH implementation for IDN followed the something rules, technical standards, et cetera. I can't read one of the words.
Yeah, thanks, Lori. This is Amr. It says, consider also whether TMCH implementation for IDNs followed the LGR rules,
et
cetera. Note, SSAC believed that this may not have been the case. This was a by Ruben in the Adobe Connect room.
All right. I don't recall what LGR means, so if you wouldn't mind putting the meaning of LGR in there, for others, including myself, who may not recall, that would be helpful. All right, moving on. Down to question 22. There were some questions that were considered to be claims questions, and in fact, we had determined were probably more rightly Sunrise questions. And so we reworded these to be geared towards Sunrise. They are now our question 12. And it should Sunrise registrations have priority over other registrations under specialized GTLDs? Should there be a different rule for some registries based on their published eligibility policies? This goes to the example that we've discussed before. When is it or isn't it appropriate to grant certain names Sunrise status if the rules of a particular GTLD would necessarily lend themselves to that? And here you see the police, the famous police illustration. Amr, there is a comment there that I absolutely cannot read about a special purpose CLD. I just see the first three letters, and I can't read anything else.
Thanks, Lori. This was actually an old comment by Christine Dorain on a previous iteration of the table and questions. And during the last call prior to ICANN 59, she noted that this comment is no longer relevant and deleted. So I think you can just ignore it and move on.
Oh, great. Thank you. So then we're through the questions. And we do
great.
Have some work to do. We do have some work to do. I see Susan Payne's hand is up.
It is.
Hand, Susan?
Yeah, it is. And it's a comment on this question 12 or 22. I'm not sure what number I'm supposed to use. 12, I think.
12 for the reconstructed question.
The text at the beginning with the highlight, I think, is new. And I'm not sure that that's helpful. I think that the wording that's been added that isn't highlighted that just says should there be different rules for some registries, or it could say something for different types of registries, I think that does the task perfectly, but I'm not sure that we know what a specialized GTLD is, and I don't think that addition is helpful. The point was that we had language that had originally said something like should the Sunrise be still be mandatory for certain TLDs or something, and we were trying to make that a bit more measured and try to reflect the fact that it doesn't necessarily have to be an on-off process, that there might be some certain types of registries it might be appropriate to have some slightly different process, which wasn't necessarily turning the Sunrise off altogether. And so that was why this question was being amended, and I don't agree with the wording in the highlights.
Susan, thank you. I tend to agree. I think that the highlighted yellow, there is a presumed priority. That's why it's Sunrise. I think the presumption's there. I don't know. This might confuse it. I'm not sure, but that's my initial reaction as well. So... although Kathy, I see in the chat, is saying we heard a lot about specialized GTLDs in the third hour. I would not recommend changing that. But at least let's talk about how we might clarify it then, so that it doesn't confuse the two questions. I think that's something that the group will have to make some sort of decision on.
Right.
Because it's a more basic question. Yeah. So, but we've noted the concerns from Kathy and the concerns from Susan today. So I think that's important. Scott, do we have time to run through the data? I have one question, though, I would like to ask the group before we run through the data.
Sure.
Okay. So the question is this. What we've done is we had presumed upon ourselves that we were not to change wording to the questions. That's why we have this. It looks confusing, but it actually makes sense if you think of the task. Here are the original questions, all 22. We've done what we were asked. We've sorted them. We've bunched them. We've clarified them to the extent that we could in the time frame allotted. We have now come out with a set of 12 multi-part questions that we do believe clarify the issues that were raised. What I would like to ask this group, if we're ready, to remove the 22 questions, and we can take the reworded questions and put them in the format similar to what we saw in Joburg, and so we can keep moving forward with less confusion. Or do people still think it's important to have these other questions available for ready reference? So basically, I'm asking if we can take the refined questions moving forward and have those be considered the questions for the group, provided the changes that have made in the notes and comments, George's questions, comments from Susan and Kathy, et cetera, are taken into consideration. All right, I will move on. People can answer in the chat, although it seems to be we have a mixed reaction. So I would ask maybe the chairs at some point might ask the whole group to take a vote on this, just to help us keep the work clear.
Well, speaking as one of the chairs, Laurie, the whole point of this exercise was to come up with a list of questions that were refinements of the charter questions that we could all agree on. So I would say, and it seems to me that I'm hearing from the group, just looking at the chat casually, that they agree that once we come to an agreed upon group of questions, the refined questions, these that you've presented us today, that is what we would.
Okay. So in further discussions, can we remove the first 22 in presenting them? That's my question.
Well, I mean, I think they should be in an annex somewhere so we know what the original questions were, because that's one of the things that we've seen as we've dealt with this is we know where we ended up, but nobody can tell you how we got there. So as long as we have a record of what those original questions were, I think it's okay.
Okay. We will proceed with that assumption, and I'm going to propose that we remove 22, put them in as an addendum, and people can refer to them when they need to. And I think it'll clarify reading this chart, which has become difficult, I think. And do we have time now to go quickly through? I can throw it back to you, Jay Scott, for data gathering, or would you like
to
continue?
Yeah, let's take us through the data that you think you all have determined that we're going to need, and then we need to talk about how we're going about getting that data.
Okay. So we've highlighted the questions, and these are the reworded question numbers. So they follow the numbers in the thin columns. It would be the fourth column on the chart you're reading. So the first one is the original charter question two. Is there evidence that registry Sunrise or premium name pricing limits owners' ability to participate in Sunrise? If so, how extensive is this problem? We do need data on this. Some of the suggested sources were the INSA survey, which has already been done. It's been posted to the CCTRT wiki, and we can post it to the RPM list as well. There is anecdotal evidence from trademark holders and registries regarding their experiences that may be helpful to the group. We've actually categorized that anecdotal evidence as well and are happy to post it by category if that could be helpful to the group. So we could use INSA survey there, but there may be registrar and registry sources as well that we are not aware of. Going down to reworded charted question four, should registry operators be required to publish their reserve name list? What registry concerns would be raised by that publication and what problems would it solve? The sources here could be anecdotal data from different stakeholders, including registries. Registries that exist in jurisdictions that prohibit the publication of specific word strings, example profane language, should especially be sought for input. So again, this is about anecdotal evidence more than quantitative evidence at this point. For original charter question 11, are limited registration periods in need of review vis-a-vis the Sunrise period? Approved launch programs, qualified launch programs, are the ALP and QLP periods in need of review? The sources for this we suggested could be TLD startup information page that has data that can be mined, as well as anecdotal data from registries. Dot Madrid is the only registry known to the subteam that has used an ALP, but there may be others. Original charter question 17, reworded question 11. How effectively can trademark holders who use non-English scripts languages be able to participate in Sunrise, including IDN Sunrises? And should any of them be further internationalized in terms of service providers, languages served? The sources here, we would say we would need a survey of IDN, GTLD registries for the number of Sunrise registrations that have taken place. We'd like to see volume here to determine whether or not there is an issue. Without understanding how the Sunrise being used in non-English scripts and IBNs, it's hard to answer the question. Original Charter 18, which was not reworded, does the Sunrise adequately address issues of registrant protection such as freedom of expression and fair use? The sources, we could reach out to the SOACs, public interest groups and trade associations, registrars and registries for information, most likely anecdotal, review articles, including investigative reporting articles, about the registration of domains in Sunrise periods that have been noted to have an impact on free expression, fair use, and the ability of registrants to register domain names, possible additional questions for the reporters on their research and findings. I'm going to add here that this addresses the freedom of expression side of things, but in earlier questions, this type of data would also be helpful on the trademark holder side, where there's been very well-documented reporting of trademark, you know, differential pricing for trademarks and so on. Original Charter Question 21, which was not reworded, in the light of concrete cases, case law, and from the perspective of owners of protected signs and of marks, which are the identified deficits of Sunrise? Anecdotal, we determine anecdotal examples should be obtained. There may be some in the interstudy. In terms of case law, our litigators out there, I'm not aware of any particular cases regarding Sunrise, but they may be there, and it would be good to know if they are. And I will yield the floor back to Jay Scott.
Okay, thank you very much. I see that George has raised his hand, so I'm going to acknowledge him. George? Is that an old hand? Okay. Well, then, so I guess, you know, since we only have about 30 minutes left, I'm going to... Do we want to talk sort of about how we're going to go about getting this information, the data that we've seen? I'm going to ask if Mary is able to speak, if she has some ideas of things we might do and how we might go about getting this, the data that we've, that Lori's just identified for us. Mary?
Thanks, Jay Scott, Lori, and everyone. This is Mary from staff. We've been thinking about this a little bit as well, and one initial comment I'd make is that we did get at least one additional suggestion for data collection in relation to Sunrise at the Joburg. As noted earlier, that was a suggestion by Denise that we also collect data on pricing for different Sunrise periods, and that can probably be done through the TLD startup page as well as through various other sources. I think the general approach, it seems to us, might be to look at those questions that actually have been agreed to by the working group as charter questions to consider. So, for example, what is now reworded charter question 8 and 11? You recall that I think early on when we started the sub-team process, the idea was to get an early start on the data collection for those questions that will need the data. So, Jay Scott, I suggest that perhaps as an initial step, the staff and co-chairs can take a look at these data collection questions and try and see which ones might require more time and which should go first, and we can do it in that order.
Okay. That sounds like a good plan. That sounds like a really good plan. And I think that will assist us in as we move forward. Michael, are you still on the call?
I am. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. Hopefully won't hack too much. I was going to, I guess I did raise my hand to say something following up Mary. I think, you know, once we have both sets of questions and the data that has been identified by the two sub-teams, then I think that's what we can sort of put together. For example, there are a number of references in both of these groups to seeking anecdotal data. And once we can pull that together, that would be good. Some of the other more empirical data, looking for particular sources to pull that together as well. And hopefully at the end of the day, then, we'll have both an identification of the sources of data and also what we're going, what we can try to seek from them, and as Mary was saying, which of those are going to require more time to obtain or more effort going forward.
Great, Michael. Can you lead us through the claims document?
I can, as soon as Amar puts it up. And Amar, I'm going to ask to sort of help out because I was not at at Joe Berg. I did hear most of the session, but had some issues. So it's really going through, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, from what we just did, is going through the updated questions where there are comments or questions. So, example. Right. So in the first updated question here, which was, is the trademark claim service having its intended effect? And then there was a comment from Ruben and Amadeo, as I recall, need to note that there may be other reasons for abandonment, including software defect on registry or registrar side, possible harvesting of claims notices, and generally registrar abandonment. And I think that would be the sort of information that we would try to identify in collecting the gathering of the information where we're trying to find from, you know, to the extent possible, what the reason for abandonment was. And that sort of goes to the question of, we have some figures from some of the surveys from other groups, what do they mean? So I think that those comments, Rubens and Amadeo, would be something that would be taken into consideration in looking for the data. Then a question, I guess I raised it in connection with the B sub-question here under one, is the trademark claim service having any unintended consequences, in, such as deterring good faith domain name applications? And my only question, well, there were two things. One, I changed I was looking at the other one. The question I had was whether or not the last part of that was necessary and desirable, or if it slanted the answer. I really don't have an opinion one way or the other, and I think keeping that in there at least serves to provide clarity as to what we're talking about as unintended consequences.
Okay.
So I would, at this point, leave that in there. I don't think there were any other comments on that. And then the other part of that, in looking at the data available, again, 1B, where we suggested looking for. And so should I go ahead and handle that now or wait?
Yeah, why not?
Questions? Okay.
Because your time is more limited.
Yeah, so the question there was just trying to come up with a definition, you know, and the terms global, generic, have been tossed around, and you know, are all of those are based on context. Whereas I thought dictionary terms would be a way of clarifying what we're talking about. So this would be dictionary terms versus those who abandoned attempts in response to distinctive trademarks. It begs the question, in some cases, I suppose, of trademarks that are originally and in some contexts dictionary terms, but I think it clarifies it a little bit more than global. I see John put up his hand. John, you want to?
Yeah, we've got John and then George.
Right.
John?
Thanks, John. Yeah, thanks, Michael and J. Scott. Just a quick point on one and two. I think we raised the issue, and I see it later on, but when we talk about the claim service, the trademark claim service is a generic term, we might get different answers depending on which part of the claim we're talking about. Is it the claim notice to the potential registrant, or is it a notice to the trademark holder? So as we suggested in Johannesburg, breaking this up into two parts. So it's not just, is the trademark claim service having its intended effect? But breaking it up into two parts. I'm not sure if we capture that sufficiently in three and later on, but I didn't want to lose that point that we raised in Johannesburg. Thank you.
That's a good point, John. I just wonder if that means that we would have to duplicate, for clarity's sake, duplicate the questions or if we would have those, how we might phrase that. That's something I'd have to think about, and I don't think we had any suggestions on rephrasing of the question so that we would clarify that, and I guess that's where we would be left. Maybe think about that, and we'll come back. George?
Michael, sorry, this is Amr, if I may just comment on that very briefly.
Thanks.
This is Amr from staff, and I just wanted to note that we did capture John's comment in Johannesburg as far as it concerned questions 2 and onward, but I can see now that it would make sense to also include question 1. But I wanted to point something out. So on page 1 in footnote 1, it says that the sub-team agrees that, as used in this list of charter questions, the phrase trademark claims covers both the pre-registration's claim notice that is sent to a domain name applicant who is attempting to register a domain name that matches a trademark label in the team stage, and the post-registration notice of a registered name that is sent to the relevant rights holder when the registrar proceeds to complete the registration. So this footnote was meant to clarify that both types of notices are being considered with each one of these questions and should also be considered when the questions are being answered. I don't know if this footnote serves the purpose adequately, the purpose that John pointed out, or not, or whether the working group feels that further clarification would be required. And I see that John says that it doesn't. So of course, staff is open to suggestions on possibly rewording these questions and making it clearer that both types of notices are being referred to in these questions. Thank you.
Let me go ahead and have George, but after George, John, I'd like to come back and ask, so you'll have time to think about this answer, whether or not is referring to the fact that it's being used as a footnote and might have the desired effect if we were to make this as a preliminary statement similar to the definitions being set out for the Sunrise section. George, you want to go ahead?
Thanks. George Griglis for the transcript. Yeah, I just want to clarify that perhaps it shouldn't just be the word dictionary terms. It should perhaps also include other widely used terms such as acronyms, common geographic terms. So perhaps instead of using the word dictionary terms, an alternative might be widely used terms. And there are different metrics that one could use to determine whether something is widely used. But, for example, there was a lawsuit that was filed yesterday or the day before regarding Point Lookout, which, you know, Brian Adams apparently used to own. You know, the current owner of it would consider it a widely used term because it's a geographic term. And so limiting it to things just in the dictionary might be too limiting in terms of what's a desirable and widely used term. Thank you.
Thanks, George. So would you be suggesting then, based on inserting language in addition there, so based on dictionary terms, dictionary widely used terms? I guess widely used. I love my company's trademark, so I hope they're widely used. But
widely used by multiple parties in terms of, you know, if you look at, for example, the word math, that's a dictionary term, but let's say an acronym like AAA. It's
right.
By many organizations. If you'd used, if you go to opencorporates.com, there are, you know, literally thousands of companies that use that term in their name. And also geographical terms. You know, while Philadelphia is in the dictionary, some of the more obscure geo terms might not be in a dictionary, but, you know, it would be, you know, widely used by different parties as trademarks or non-trademarks. So I'm not sure what the correct language would be, but limiting it to dictionary terms doesn't really capture what's desired by many potential registrants.
Mary suggesting in the chat that we consider a set of words or terms. What that we would present, is that what you're getting at, Mary? And have people opine on that? I'm not sure what you're getting at. You want to clarify that?
dictionary terms, it could be acronyms, dictionary words, commonly used phrases, and other widely used terms.
Yeah. I mean, we sort of the generic term that was used before was sort of a catch-all that was generally understood, although incorrect. And I think that's one reason why I was suggesting dictionary terms. I wouldn't include acronyms because they are not generally understood and may have various meanings and may be protectable as trademarks as well. I guess what would be useful would be if you had a suggestion of what language we might insert there or clarification. Jay Scott is suggesting perhaps we use something rather than just dictionary terms, using dictionary terms and other terms that have a non-trademark significance.
George Kriegless, again, calling out what Susan is saying in the chat room, what are we trying to do here? So it's like a term is a trademark, but then how distinctive it is compared to, on the spectrum of trademarks, where there's basically one potential, say, legitimate, for lack of a better term, a user of it or a registrant of it versus, thousands of prospective registrants. So I don't know if, we have the ability to measure that strength or distinctiveness, but that's probably what this question is trying to capture, whether, one trademark is registered in the TMCH, but then there are thousands of prospective registrants, and one of those prospective registrants that isn't in the TMCH abandons their attempt to register it based on that one warning.
I think probably, and Greg, why don't I ask Greg if he wants to jump in? I have an idea here, but I saw that your hand was up there for a bit, Greg. You might have a solution or suggestion.
Thanks. Greg Chatton, for the record. I'm not sure that I have a solution, but I'm concerned that this assumes a false dichotomy between dictionary terms and distinctive trademarks, at least in the trademark sense. And I see Jeff Newman's note here, we should not be discussing trademark law here, the different levels of distinctiveness. I agree with that. A trademark can be distinctive and also be a dictionary term. Not to pick on Jay Scott's employer, but Adobe is a distinctive trademark. It's also in the dictionary. So if we want to get at anecdotes about people dropping why people are dropping their applications, maybe we need to ask about that rather than try to create some sort of categorization, which is only going to get us down a series of rabbit holes. And so, the idea that any of these that is a deterrent for the right or wrong reason, really has to do not only with the mark, but with the intent of the applicant. So, looking only at the string and not the reason gives us half an answer anyway. It wouldn't be a worthwhile anecdote to know whether somebody wanted to register Adobe.software in order to sell bootleg Adobe software versus whether somebody wanted to register Adobe.building in order to advertise their business of selling of making Adobe bricks for buildings or just provide information on Adobe bricks. So, we're kind of dancing around a bunch of issues here, perhaps each with our own innate positions about them, but just trying to load everything onto this question is going to end up with a complete lack of usable information. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. And I think going back and looking at this, it seems to me, and I do not recall if there was a specific conversation on this, and Amar or Mary, you might. It seems to me that the intent of this portion, so there are two portions of 1B. One is anecdotal data, to address whether or not it's having unintended consequences. And the second one is looking at what terms actually were applied for and abandoned, and understanding how many of those might have been generic, descriptive, dictionary terms as opposed to very distinctive terms, so that we would be able to presumably draw some ideas or conclusions about the effects of the notice having an unintended consequence of preventing people from going ahead with these generic applications. So perhaps, that's what it was trying to get at, and perhaps it would be better simply to leave it more open if we wanted to try and get that information, such that it would read more granular data about the nature of the terms, of the domain name, the nature of the domain name applications that were abandoned in response to claims notices, period.
And Michael, I noticed that Mary's hand is up and then Greg's hand is up again.
Okay, yeah, Mary, go ahead.
Thanks, Michael. This is Mary from staff. So staff has been thinking about, the sort of next steps for data, and mindful of what J. Scott asked for the Sunrise set of data suggestions as well. And our suggestion here is that rather than trying to decide what actual term to use in this 1B, it seems from listening to everyone that folks more or less have the same general idea about what it means and what we're trying to do. So to the extent, Michael, as you said, that we go ahead with data collection on the anecdotal basis for this 1B, we wonder if it might be actually more useful when the time comes, and it might come quite soon, to just decide on a set of what those terms are, whether they be the descriptive words or a set thereof, and a set of distinctive trademarks, and go ahead and get that data, whether that would be more efficient. Thanks.
Thanks, Mary. I noticed that Greg Shatton's hand is up, and then I see that Kathy Kleinman has raised her hand.
Okay, Greg, go ahead. Okay, Greg, go ahead.
Thanks, Greg Shatton again. Just to reiterate, I think if we're collecting anecdotal evidence, we need to collect both the reason for the withdrawal or dropping of the application and not just the string, because we don't know whether we can't draw any conclusions about the reasoning. Maybe we could draw the conclusion if it's a fanciful, made-up trademark. But even then, we don't know what the reasoning was. And if it's a trademark that is arbitrary or suggestive, descriptive, then we don't know anything about what the reason is for this. So, as Jeff points out, we don't know anything about intended consequences or unintended consequences because we don't know anything about the intentions of the applicant. So I think any question 1B can't just ask for the string. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Greg. Kathy?
Okay, thank you.
Responding to several of the issues raised, so this is Kathy Kleinman, of course. To Greg, sure, we can ask both about the string and about the rationale to the extent that people can provide it. That makes sense. Regarding the dictionary terms, I agree with Mary. We all understand what we're talking about here. So I would keep it because we know exactly, we know the general category. It raises the same idea in everyone's head. If you want to expand to include in other commonly used terms, in that case, we're probably talking about first and last names, among other things, and geographic places, well-known places. But for Mary, I don't think there's any way to identify ahead of time a class of words that we should be looking for. That's why we're going out to gather the evidence. To try to predetermine what that is it's pure guesswork, and we probably miss most of it. So, no, I don't think we can do that. I'd also expand this to, you know, anecdotal evidence from registrants, domain name applicants, and probably from reporters. One of the ways we're getting our information is from some of the stories that are being written by some of the reporters that track domain name issues. And they're somehow party to evidence that's not public, but they're publishing it based on their investigations. So I would add that as another source to many of the areas we're looking at data, which, again, would be the reporters and the stories they're publishing, both about trademark claims and Sunrise. Thank you.
Yeah, Kathy, this is Michael. Kathy. I think that's a really good point, going to some of those sources with some of that information.
I see George's hand has come back up.
George Krikos again, yeah. For the transcript. Do we actually have a list of all the domain names that were attempted to be registered? Which one of them got a trademark claims notice? Which one was abandoned? Like, if we had it domain name by domain name, then we could, you know, go back and kind of group them. You know, we could sort the domain name. We can sort the TMCH string by length or whether it matches, you know, dictionary terms, geographic terms. You know, it's kind of a bit fuzzy, but at least if we had all the data, you know, let's say, you know, the term Philadelphia was rejected 50 times out of 60 across all TLDs, not just one single TLD, then that might tell you something versus, you know, the term Exxon being rejected, you know, 99 times out of 99 times. If we had it, if we had all the data and then could go back and try to group it later, that might, you know, allow us to ask that question.
Thank you, George.
So, George, your question was whether or not there was a data that actually would identify which names, specific names, were abandoned, correct?
George Krikos, yeah, yes. Like, do we have that level of detail, like that, you know, 10,000 people try to register Google dot something string, and then 99% of the time, you know, they abandoned it versus, 400 tried to register AAA and 350 abandoned it versus stuff like that. So we could then later go on and say, you know, the term Google is, you know, a fanciful mark. The term Philadelphia is both a geographical mark and a perhaps a dictionary term, and so on.
Right. I wonder, Amr or Mary, I know that the statistics that we have were from the analysis group study and report with the number of claims and such and abandonments. I do not recall if we asked them if they had a list of the specific names that were abandoned. Do you recall?
Hi, Michael. This is Amr, and I was just typing this into the chat. The data that the analysis group included in its revised report didn't include a comprehensive list as what George is seeking, but if I recall correctly, it did include the top 10 strings that prompted trademark notifications or trademark files being downloaded from the TMCH. I don't think that's exactly what George is looking for, but I believe it did include the most common ones, but not a comprehensive list of all of them.
Right. That suggests, I guess, Amr, that they would be able to put together a list of all of them if that they were simplifying it for digestion.
They probably could, but I'm not sure if they are in a position to share this information with the working group.
Okay.
Okay, Jeff Newman.
Yeah. Jeff. Jeff, are you on mute?
It takes me a second to... Yeah, well, I was connecting the audio. I didn't have it connected. I was thinking about whether to make this point in the conversation or just on the chat. I made it in the chat. I think at some point we kind of need to be real as a group here about the data that we're actually able to get. versus data that we may need to recommend on a go-forward basis. Other than potentially ICANN insiders or domainers that apply for names that may even know that this group exists to review things, I don't see anyone coming forward or us being able to reach anyone that potentially applied for a name but then dropped it or even accepted it based on a claim simply because that information wasn't collected initially. And anyone that comes forward to tell a story is inherently suspect because there's no way they can prove that they actually did or did not apply for a name. So I'm just really, really concerned that we're spending a lot of time talking about data that we know at this point we can't get. Make any kind of determination as to a chilling effect or whatever at this point is not going to be achievable, but it could be a recommendation from this group to see if we can survey or the clearinghouse or someone could introduce a survey as to why people reject it in the future so that in the next review, if we ever do another review, that we can actually use that information that's actually reliable. Anecdotal information or press stories that are seeking the controversial, the one exception to the rule, it's not reliable. I mean, we can talk about it over and over again, but I think we really need to get down to provable things as opposed to anecdotes.
Thanks, Jeff. George?
We got George and then Kathy.
Yeah, we've got, 4 minutes?
Yeah. Make it quick, guys.
Yeah, George Krikos. I don't think the fact that we're missing the data because it wasn't collected at the time is necessarily something that totally prevents us from being able to do our work. If we had the data we're looking at, and obviously the analysis group has it, because otherwise they couldn't have completed their report. It's a matter of whether they're willing to share it or not. We're able to draw those inferences. If we know that, only 20% of the time hotels dot something was abandoned versus, Exxon being abandoned 99% of the time, that tells us that, it isn't having a chilling effect. But, unless we have that granular data, we can't make those inferences. I agree that, it would have been better if, people had been surveyed at the time, why are you not following through with this registration? Have a survey at that time, but obviously ICANN didn't think things through properly and didn't force registrars to collect that data.
Thanks, George. Kathy?
Okay, very fast. This is the million-dollar question, right? Why are people turning around at 93.7% when they see the trademark claims notice? As many people have said, we never expected anything that big. So let's ask the question. If people don't want to answer it, fine. But we know based on public outreach that they've already tried to answer it, including registries that have worked with anchor tenants or pioneer tenants, as some people call them. So let's ask the question. If we don't get answers, then we know the data's not there. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. With that, I'm going to call the call to a conclusion for today. Susan?
Yeah, I think we've asked this question already. The analysis group were asked to go back and try to determine better data that would enable them to understand the 94%. They couldn't get it. They asked for input. They couldn't get it. We've asked registries and registrars information. We've got no responses. We are just wasting our time.
Thanks, Susan. Mary?
Hi, Jay Scott. Actually, I was going to go into the next steps for the agenda item so I can desist if you want to close out this particular discussion.
Yeah, I just wanted to close this out. What I'd like to do is have either Christine or Michael on the call so we can finish out the claims service questions on the first, 30 minutes of next week's call. And then we need to start looking at these the chairs will have already done it, and maybe we can start presenting sort of a work plan for how to gather the data we're going to gather so that we can get agreement on that and we can get that out. That was going to be my suggestion. Mary, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Jay Scott. And just to note that for the Sunrise portion, we do have some homework to do, and obviously staff will get together with the working group co-chairs and, if appropriate, the sub-team leads as well to reorganize those documents for Sunrise at least, and comes up the next week for claims. We just wanted to add two things. One is that the poll on the open TMCH questions, because some folks were busy and traveling the week after ICANN 59, the co-chairs have agreed that the poll be kept open through the end of this week, that is this Friday, which is the absolute last day to get your poll answers in if you haven't already. The link's in an email sent by Arma. We can send that around again. And the only other thing, Jay Scott, is to note that, as Susan Payne has told us, that the rotation for this particular, I guess, trimester seems to clash with the registry stakeholder group's calls, which was not intended to be the case. So we may need to move the rotational time or adjust them accordingly, and this is just okay to let folks know that we'll work that out. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Okay, with that, I'm going to call the call to a close. Thank you, everyone, for your participation today, and have a wonderful rest of your week, and we will meet again next week. Ciao.
Ciao.